The playback of the recording will now begin.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining this conference call. I'm Jack Del from DBS, which is Hong Kong. Today, ICE Consortium announced the acquisitions of Transworld Corporation. This company is engaged in the hotel and the gaming business in Europe. In this conference call, Chris Wong, the Managing Director of ICE Consortium, and Angus Chan, CFO of ICE Consortium, will give more details about these acquisitions. Chris, thank you.
Sure. I think I will run through the presentation, and at the end, if there's any specific question, I think you press star zero for questions, is that correct? Okay. Happy to take on any questions at the end of the presentation. My name is Chris Song. I'm the Managing Director of ICE Consortium. We announced this morning that we have signed an agreement to acquire Transworld Corporation. It is a U.S. Listed company, the operation is in fact located in Europe, primarily in Germany, in Austria, as well as in Czech Republic. I want to explain to you about the rationale about this transaction later on, but if I may just quickly go through the transaction details. The consideration for the equity for 100% stake is 42 million, or not exceeding 42 million, subject to some adjustment on descending shares. As of today, we have 88% of shareholders agreeing to the transaction. The reason for a high percentage initially was because we managed to secure, before we announced, the consent of three big shareholders of the company. They have held on to the shares for a while, and it's time for them to exit. And we are very happy that we've come in at the right time to be negotiating this transaction, and have been able to secure the deal at a very attractive valuation overall for our shareholders. The form of the transaction is going to be in the form of a merger between our newly set up U.S. entity and the target. The reason being is just a common way of structuring that sort of deal in the U.S. and we have adopted basically a similar structure as with other transactions. But at the end of the day, it's really on the substance an acquisition of the operation. And I'll talk a bit about our view of whether or not it's necessary to maintain a U.S. Company long-term. The answer is not really. So there is a bit of cost savings that we can make should we decide to move away from a U.S. Listing for that company and consolidate the whole operation into our European hospitality business. In terms of closing conditions, there are some closing conditions of which the main one has been met, which is getting the consent of the majority shareholders. The other conditions precedents are, of course, things like meeting the antitrust law, which we don't feel is an issue given the size of the operation, and also having the net indebtedness of the company not exceeding certain threshold, which we feel should not be a problem given that we're seeing cash accumulation in the company moving forward. The main operation is really the Czech casino operations where the license has just recently been renewed. In Czech, what you do need to operate a gaming business is you need a basic license and you also need a local license. And in their case, they've renewed recently both licenses. The basic license is typically for a period of 6 years, and the local license is renewable every 3 years, and they've recently just renewed those two following a change in regulations in Czech Republic. And I'll talk a bit more about the opportunities that has arisen because of the change in regulations there later on. In terms of the strategic rationale, if you turn to page 6 of our presentation, and I hope all of you have a copy of that presentation, this is an operation with an established hospitality platform in Europe. It has the best-in-class casino assets in Czech Republic. The reason I say it is because they were one of the first to get their system all in place to meet the new Czech operations. And one of the opportunities that we see there is with the change in the Czech regulations requiring more stringent control of any anti-money laundering as well as the control over money flow, all the gaming operators are required to have certain systems in place, and they were one of the first one to have that ready, including the implementation of a casino management system, which they already have, especially in the last quarter. They think they spent quite a lot of money getting that in place, and were one of the first ones to actually get that ready. And as a result of the change in gaming regulations, we expect that there will be the smaller ones, smaller casinos in the Czech Republic will be closing down, and we are seeing more and more Chinese in the region becoming mainstream customers to this operation, which we feel that there can be a lot of value that we can add in that regard. In addition to the casino assets in Czech Republic, they also have hotel assets in Germany, in Austria, as well as one hotel which is right next to their Route 59 casino. So in total, the company has 5 owned hotels assets as well as 3 casino assets. Most of these assets have are freehold. In addition, there are some surplus land that are attached to one of the casino operations where we see potentially you can develop that into a more destination style casino operation. In fact, a few years ago, I don't know whether you guys heard about this, but there were a number of big casino operators, global casino operators, looking to establish some big destination style casinos on the border between Austria and Hungary. Sands China was looking at it. There were also other casino operators looking at it. And it's because they all see sort of a great opportunity in the region for a destination style casino. So this acquisition actually serves as a very good platform for us to be exploring those kind of opportunity as well as potentially in the UK, right? When we have a growing number of hotels in operation now, we also see that there will be strong synergies if we were able to actually use a gaming platform that we have, right, to potentially look at some UK style casino deals by going after those smaller licenses and combining it with the hotels. There are actually not many hotels in the UK where you actually have a hotel attached to a casino. And we've been actually looking around for a good gaming operation, small enough, but can serve as a very good platform for us to be using to expand our hospitality offering in Europe. And this is a vehicle or a platform that we have found eventually. So we are very happy that we are able to now secure a deal like that at an attractive valuation, and hopefully use that to grow our hospitality offering going forward in the region. The operation, as you can see from the filings that they have in the U.S., and it's a very transparent company because it's U.S. listed, subject to U.S. disclosure obligations. The company has a pretty good overall track record in terms of growth. The company has been reinvesting a lot of the surplus cash that they generate over the years in buying up some smaller hotel assets. In terms of that strategy, I've had a lot of discussions with the management there. I think going forward, we will probably adjust the strategy there a bit by focusing the resources on bigger city hotels rather than more regional hotels that they have used the surplus cash that they generated in the past to acquire. So the growth has been driven pretty much organically in the last few years in the company, right? By investing those surplus cash that the company generates and then reinvesting into opportunistically into other regional hotels. So that strategy, as I said just now, may change a little going forward. In terms of long-term net impact on the regulatory change, I think I mentioned this briefly just now. We see that, you know, with the change in regulation, hopefully it will allow us to some consolidation to be happening in the region, which hopefully will give rise to new opportunities for this platform going forward. Now, with that change in regulation, there was some short-term impact in terms of the numbers. You'll see that actually the third quarter numbers of the company dropped compared to historical numbers, primarily because of the implementation of the new casino management system. And it's all public. You can check the disclosures. That actually has given us the opportunity to actually negotiate down quite a fair bit on the valuation. And of course, we're doing this with full knowledge of their coming sets of numbers, as well as preliminary numbers that we're seeing in terms of the operation in January and February, which are all looking fairly interesting in terms of showing signs of strong recovery following the implementation of the new system. So, and because of that, we moved fairly quickly in terms of trying to get the deal agreed and then move on to getting it signed. In terms of the balance sheet of the operation, I mentioned that just now that they have 8 cell phone assets, including 5 hotels and 3 casinos, demonstrating historically the ability to generate strong recurring cash flow. The other sort of uniqueness of this platform is that their gearing level is actually also at a very low level. They historically didn't have any borrowing at all, and they have been using the surplus cash that they generate to acquire assets. And with the latest acquisition, which is a hotel in Austria, is located in Linz, which personally visited. They decided to take on a little debt, which resulted in basically still a very low gearing of net gearing of about 14% based on their September 30th numbers. In terms of the consideration, it represents a discount of 27% to NAV. So not very often you can buy a deal where you can you don't need to pay a premium, and with this transaction, I think our shareholders should be happy to learn that actually we paid a discount to NAV to secure the transaction. In terms of EBITDA multiple, if you look at the historical multiple, I think 16 is probably a normalized year. The EBITDA multiple was about 4.6 times. PE for 2016 was 6.6 times. But if you look at the last 12 months, EV/EBITDA, because of the impact that I mentioned on the business for the third quarter, their last 12 months EV/EBITDA was about 6 times, and their last 12 months earning multiple was about 8.9 times, still at a very attractive level, even you take into account, you know, one of the worst periods in terms of their operation. So to conclude, right, in terms of strategic rationale, I think it's a very good natural expansion of the group's hospitality business in Europe. We see that the value add that we can bring to the table, not only, you know, on the bringing in hopefully some Asian customer base into their operations, but also I think in terms of integrating that into our platform, I don't think we need a U.S. Vehicle for that purpose, and that could potentially save us a couple of million U.S. dollar in terms of overheads. So if you factor that into the valuation that we pay, in fact, the valuation becomes even more compelling. And the most important rationale for us about this transaction really is in acquiring a gaming platform that will facilitate our potential initiative in this area. And we're seeing quite a lot of potential deals that are emerging. It's just that we don't really have an operating team that can do this. And with this, right, we now have an operating team that we can use for the gaming operations. So that is, I think, by far a more important rationale than buying this at a very attractive valuation. So, but the low valuation is also a very important, compelling rationale for us as well. In terms of the synergistic benefit to the group overall hospitality business, as I mentioned just now, I think we feel that the more strategic assets are probably more the gaming platform, the hotel assets that they have, with the exception of Linz, the other hotel assets, with the exception of Linz as well as the hotel assets in Czech Republic. The other hotel assets, we feel we can potentially recycle that and one day reinvest it into the city style, either hotel or casino. Now, this is still in very much in the early stage of the thinking, so I don't want to mislead you in any way that there are firm plans on that already. We don't have any firm plans on that yet. I think we do see that potentially that could be done, and because they own the assets there, there are also a potential of basically levering it up. It should we want to basically use the balance sheet to raise cash for reinvestment, we can still also do that. So this is, I think, a number of the sort of potential value extraction opportunities that we see in the business. So that really, I think, is what I want to say in terms of the strategic rationale that we see in acquiring this business overall. Now, if you turn to page 8 of the presentation that is on our website, you'll be able to see that overall, in terms of the track record of the operations, right, is the business has been growing from, you know, 36 million in financial year 13 to 53 million in the financial year 2016. You will be able to get a lot more financial information from their filings, which is public. In terms of EBITDA, you will also see that the operation has been growing on a consolidated basis. EBITDA grew from 5.1 million to 11 million in 2016. The third quarter number 17 shows a cumulative EBITDA of about 5.8 million overall. And if you zoom in and look at the corporate overhead, it's been like growing from 3 to 4.4 last in 2016. Again, a significant part of that corporate overhead relates to U.S. listing. So there is some opportunities there from a rationalization perspective. Net income, again, you will see from the chart, is grown from 2.4 to 6.3 in 2016. This year, we're expecting that the number will drop for a number of reasons. One is the implementation of the casino gaming system, which impacted the both investment costs as well as revenue. But we are seeing the normalized basis. Hopefully, when we close this transaction, which is expected to be towards before the end of June, the business will, you know, overall business will be operating on a normalized basis, hopefully. So that's how we see. If you turn on to the next page, which is page 9, you see that the company's balance sheet, right? So this is the balance sheet figure, which shows a total assets of $82 million and a total liability, including some provisions of 25, so giving a net assets of 57 or net gearing ratio of 14%. One thing that I like to say, right, if you look at the balance sheet, is that historically on the slot machines, they have used a lease model, meaning they've signed an operating lease with a casino machine or slot machine provider where they pay a regular fixed rent to this machine owner. I've been talking to the management, and we do see potential opportunities of actually acquiring those machines. And that would also reduce the ongoing lease payment that you are required to pay to this gaming machine company. So this is another sort of cost opportunity that we see. In terms of the breakdown of I think the revenue of the operations, I won't go into detail, but the business is split between slot games as well as a table game, and in terms of the breakdown, I think you'll be able to see more from the filing. But the business is both slots and table. Slots is actually a more important operation overall. But table is also showing a good contribution. I think their net win ratio is something like over 20% historically, with very little baccarat. That is the reason why that is the case. It's more, I think, the style of the European players. But there's no reason why, with more Asian players, why we can't introduce more a baccarat game into the operations. It all depends on, you know, the customers, right? And with baccarat, you really need a more bigger regular pool of loyal customers there in order to create the stability in the net win ratio. Now, if you turn on to the appendix, you will see that there are some pictures of the hotel assets. We visited all of them. Took us about 2.5-3 days to see all the 8 properties. But it has a total of 572 rooms. So even if you measure it on the basis of price per key, it is a very attractive valuation. But of course, the casino part is where the main operation is. In terms of the quality of the hotel, is, I would say it's a 3-4-star type hotel, depending on locations. They've used the brand of Transworld for overall their hotel. For the casino, they've used a brand called American Chance Casino. That's the brand that they use for their casino operations. So this summary, I think, shows you a breakdown of both rooms in each property as well as the conference facilities that they have. So again, you know, what we are seeing, the opportunity really is in the gaming platform, and we do see opportunity to consolidate this portfolio into maybe some larger city hotels like what Dorset has been doing. In terms of the casino portfolio, if you turn to the next page, on page 12, the casinos are located on the border between Czech and Germany, as well as Czech and Austria. The reason why there is such a business and is doing reasonably well is because the gaming tax in on the Czech side, and also the labor cost on the Czech side, is actually lower compared to Germany or Austria. So by putting operation just right on the border, they can attract a lot of the customers on the German side as well as the Austria side to go there, and they can give more compelling service as well as freebies that they can give to their customers. And of course, in Austria, you do have also other casinos, but the tax rate in Germany as well as Austria is a lot higher. That's also the reason why I think when Sands and other people, the big operators, were looking at establishing a Eurovegas-style casinos, they are looking at, you know, potentially on the border of Austria with, say, Hungary. And now there are also talks that, for example, Sands were looking at creating a Vegas-style casino in Madrid. And now I think there are talks about, you know, Hard Rock establishing something in Barcelona. So there is a market. It's just no European operators have done it the way the US or the Asian operators have done it. So just to give you some background information about the European casino market. So the Route 59 is the one that I mentioned in terms of having a bit of surplus land. It's really on the border between Vienna and Austria. In fact, I think it's en route between Prague and Vienna. So from Vienna to Prague, if you for the tourists who take that route, right? I think for people in Hong Kong, and some of you may have also taken that route, you'll go past this this site. It's on the sort of main highway, and you kind of the middle stop, and you go there, and it's kind of you see quite a lot of interesting amusement parks, and it's right on the border. Route 59 is another one which is closer to Linz, which is the second largest city, and is serving more the Austrian market. And then Česká is basically on the border with Germany. It's also really again, you know, targeting the cities around Germany, like Munich and Bogen, those kind of cities. And on page 13, we show a map of those casinos. And on page 14 is really to give you some idea of the industry overview. Czech is an interesting country. Not only have they, it's part of the EU, first of all, you know, both all of Germany, Austria, and Czech, they are part of the EU. In terms of gaming tax, right, the slots is 35%, but live game is only 23%. And then they have an income tax, which is reasonably low, which is 19%. So all the revenue that is being showed is net of gaming tax. So when for those people who are looking at the revenue of TWC, is net of gaming tax. That's all I want to say. The recent gaming regulations change is primarily on requiring all casino operators in Czech to be implementing a more stringent money laundering regulations in line with the EU regulations. I'm glad to say that this company is one of the first ones to have implemented that and have gone through basically the tough time of adjusting to the new regulations, and that created opportunities for us as well as the market. So that concludes my overall presentation about this opportunity. I may want to just also speak very quickly about a recent land acquisition that we did in Singapore. Last week, we actually announced that we also secure a very good site in Singapore, which is in Holland Road or on Holland Road or in the Holland Road area, which is a very more prestigious part of a residential area in Singapore. So we intend to redevelop that site into a more high-end residential product. We have entered the Singapore market a while now. I mean, we've been in and out of the market. You know, during the very few years back when the market was very hot before the government started clamping down, we actually exited almost everything in Singapore, including selling our own office. We have a couple of years ago, we entered the market with the acquisition of Artra, which is a joint venture that we have with New World Group, where we own 70%. That project has sold very well in Singapore, and we have a very good grasp of the market in Singapore on the residential side. We're seeing actually pretty strong momentum. And we are at a stage where we need to replenish our land bank, having digested quite a fair bit in Singapore. So we've decided to actually acquire this through a collective sale, which, as we all know, right, in Asia, in Singapore or Hong Kong, land supply is tight. But for this particular parcel of land, we managed to buy it at a very reasonable price. It's a freehold land. We can build about 100,000 square feet on the site, and including the what we call the balcony bonus, which is sellable in Singapore. The land cost is only about 1609, which compared to some recent acquisitions by our competitors in other area, similar area or maybe not so good area, not as good as this one, they paid a bit more. So we again demonstrated our ability to secure, you know, sites at a reasonable valuation. So that really concludes my update, and I'm happy to take any questions.
We'll now begin our question and answer session. If you have questions for today's speaker, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and you will enter the queue. After you're announced, please ask a question. If you find your question has been answered before it is your turn to speak, please press 02 to cancel the question. So once again, please press 01 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. Once again, please press 01 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. The first question is from Jason Light at Hickman. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much for the conference call. It's very helpful. Just want to ask two quick questions. First is in the gaming asset in Czech, and the second is on the Singapore land purchase. The first one is on just generally, how do you see the stability of the regulatory environment in Czech, especially given that the recent changes there? If I look at the numbers here, it seems like the gaming asset at the current level is you get the pretty cheap valuation. But how stable do you think you the overall regulatory environment there is, given that the gaming license seems to be of a relatively short duration, and also whether you think that the gaming tax is also stable there, whether there's incentive for government to hike the gaming tax, because it's politically it tends to be a easier game, easier tax for politicians to raise globally. The second question on Singapore land purchase, just want to understand a bit more your expectation on the kind of margin that you can be able to achieve there. And when you look at the margin, do you assume any price increase throughout the year? Because there seems to be a lot of market assumption on the Singapore residential price increases this year. Do you bake that in when you purchase land, and whether you have planned to further purchase in Singapore? Thank you.
Okay, let me go through the first question first. I think the question is on our view on the regulatory stability as well as whether our view is whether there will be gaming tax increase that could affect the cash flow of the operation. Now, in fact, if you look at the Czech regulatory environment, it's been through a pretty extensive review under the previous regime, and also I think the guy has been elected as well now as the president. And that extensive review has resulted in the requirement for all the casino operators in Czech Republic to conform with the new rules, which primarily targets a few things, right? I mean, the government wanted to really, I think, with any gaming operator, they always want to consolidate the entire industry into the hands of a few bigger operators, and they are making all the big or small operators to conform with that, which requires the bonding of put money as a security deposit with the regulator. Not only that, but also the implementation of a system that requires the ID check of all customers. Now, initially, it's actually quite painful for TWC because to get customers in and have to produce their ID and all that, right, before you enter. It is actually quite a big deterrent initially, but with more and more people getting registered and get used to that, and now that is kind of we've gone through the period of adjustment, right? I think we're quite confident to say that it's unlikely that the government is going to dramatically change that again, because all they've done, right, is first of all conform with EU regulations, and second of all, they've been through a pretty extensive review of the whole thing, right, including the gaming tax changes. So I think we've been through the difficult part now, which is having the regulation in to a standard which is actually quite high, right? And when we invest in the location, we actually do, it's the first question we ask ourselves, right? What are the regulatory risks? And we are quite comfortable that they've been through that change, and as a result, right, we are at a regime which is going to be providing a lot more stability in that regard. So that hopefully answers the first question. As to the second question, which is our view on the margin. Now, when we look at the Singapore market, right, I think one thing you need to be aware is that the main cost is really the land. The way the market or the development market is structured in Singapore is you can use the buyers actually finance the construction. You know, if, as long as you can sell the product, right, you can draw on progress payment by customers to pay for the construction, right? And those, that's the beauty of basically the Malaysian and the Singaporean market. You can actually do that. So when we look at deals in Singapore or Malaysia and all that, I think a more important measure is not the margin, but the return on equity. The return on equity, of course, the ability to deploy a significant amount of equity to generate the right return is where, you know, it's unlike, say, Hong Kong, right, or unlike other places where I think margin maybe more interesting. And the current market in even Hong Kong, right, is everyone is looking at return on equity rather than margin. Margin has been compressed around the region overall, and you will see it from the numbers that the different developers will be releasing. Even in China, right, margin has been compressed over time. Having said that, I think with the purchase price that we have, which is 1609, and if you look at the surrounding area for new build, for freehold, I don't think you, first of all, I can't see any sort of big development in Holland Park area that are being sort of marketed at the moment. But the intelligence is saying is for new build today in that market is probably around 2,500 sing per square feet for new build freehold residential. If your product is about 70 square meter, and for this particular project, we don't have any restrictions on the number of apartments that we need to build. But we still need to go through the planning process to come up with the right product. But the value creation that we can see is instead of going out currently with the 2,000, the product is 2,000 square feet, the old apartments, right? If you string that to, say, 700 square feet or 800 square feet, a two-bedroom product, you can potentially get a selling price which is north of 2005 is where we are aiming to get for this particular project. And that would result in hopefully a double-digit IRR. I wouldn't want to go into specific as to what exactly that figure is, but I'm pretty confident it will be a double-digit IRR. And then as to whether we will go for more deals in Singapore, the answer is we are always looking for new development deals. And yes, we are not only in Singapore, but in across the regions that we operate. Right? If we can get a good project, we will go for it.
Okay. If I can follow up on that, as we are thinking on dividing up the site from a larger unit to a smaller unit, it implies like we're getting more units, right? I understand in Singapore they recently introduced the a feasibility study for on block views in case you
want to increase
all this traffic feasibility study, right? With all those in mind, what was the expected timeline we're looking here, especially given that we are talking more on an ROE basis instead of the pure margin basis? How quickly we launch the project?
The beauty with this collective sale is that you don't pay until the government has given its approval, right? So, in fact, you don't need to pay until, unlike a normal tender where you need to pay like within 2 months, right, of you winning the tender. For this one, right, you're talking about maybe a 9 to 12 months horizon before you have to come up with the land price, the purchase price. And from there to basically when you launch is maybe another, because you've got a year of preparation already, hopefully the time to market will be a lot shorter. I don't know whether that answers the question, but there is an advantage for collective sale, right? in terms of IRR calculation.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Christopher Penn at DBS. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for the call. Very, very useful. Can I just check in terms of this, I guess, is more of a fundamental question for the company, as in how much gaming experience does the company have or management team? And in terms of running that side of the business, are you keeping most of, you know, the staff at Transworld, or, you know, are you hiring new people? So it's more of a fundamental, you know, your background experience type question. Second question is actually on the properties itself, the casinos and the hotel. Has there been a valuation report done recently on them? And if yes, can you share that?
Okay, gaming experience. I was the CEO of China Lot. I was running a gaming equipment company before. We have been working very closely with Star Entertainment Group in terms of building an integrated resort in Brisbane. So there's been quite a lot of experience that we've gained there. But having said that, we do not have an operating team, and that's the reason why we have decided to go to buy a gaming platform like TWOC, which is the best in class assets in the region. It has a very good operating team with high operating standard in terms of compliance as well as system. So we do intend to keep the management team. It is one of the, I think, rationale for making this acquisition is to establish a gaming platform with basically what we can then do going forward. In terms of property valuation, the company has an annual valuation on the assets or on the business for audit purposes, and I believe they do have something like that done, which I can't disclose the number, but is that a number substantially higher?
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Rachel at Orient Securities. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, I'm Rachel. I'm just wondering regarding your interest in casino business. You just talked about, you know, the potential in the UK and also in continental Europe. Do you see any possibility for your expansion in other places like PLC or, you know, other places at the moment or maybe in the future? If yes, whereabouts? Thank you.
Yeah, but I think first of all, I think we do see a lot of, especially with our operation, we do see a lot of synergies between hotel and casino. And it is for that reason that we've decided to go and invest in the Queen's Wharf development, where we see, you know, that there is a lot of synergies between the hotel and the casino side, and we can extract quite a lot of value from the operations. Now, I talk about using this platform for this key to transfer platform for potentially UK or Europe. We do also look at Asian opportunities from time to time, and there are certain markets where is the right market for us to enter, but there are also some new market where we feel it's going to be too costly for us to make a bid. For example, the Japanese market, we did look at it, but we decided not to go for it because we are not big enough or qualified enough to go after that sort of market. But the Australian market is an interesting one, and we are investing a lot of hotel infrastructure in Australia. Even with our partner Star Entertainment Group, I think we've disclosed this, right? We are building a hotel assets on their Jupiter site in Queensland. We are building a few hotels on the Queenswharf side with a share of the gaming revenue. Whether or not there will be more opportunities there, I think we do not rule out any additional opportunities that we see there. That's also one of the reasons why collectively we and our partners have bought into the Sheraton in Gold Coast. Is Macau going to have a different regulatory regime? I do not know or can't say, but should there be an opportunity that arises in Macau, we will be quite interested as well. If it's the right sort of deal for us, right? And you may recall many years ago we did have a joint venture with Sands China, where we were going to build out Site 3 with Sands China in Macau, and we actually had an MOU with them, and of course at the end of the day they decided to go on their own, but hopefully that is also an indication of our potential appetite in that location, where you know it's closer to us and we feel you know there's an opportunity for us to do something, right? But are there anything imminent? Not really. I mean, you know, they haven't even announced any potential change in the licensing process there. So I can't say for sure that there will be an opportunity for us there. But Australia, definitely, I think we are already working there. And as to other markets, we will continue to monitor, but nothing immediate yet.
All right, cheers.
So once again, please press 01 on your telephone keypad to ask a question.
Okay, if there's no other questions, then I think we conclude our conference call today. And should you have any other follow-up questions, drop us a line. Or you know, contact us directly. We're happy to meet with you to share with you our thoughts and our initiatives.
There are currently no more questions.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
This concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may disconnect.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks.